So this is how I think it went down. Shout out to Terence McKenna.
Take it easy, dude, but take it.
If we go way, way back, all the way to the time when we were mainly just animals, living in the rainforest, hunting and scavenging for food, eventually climatological stresses in these environments pushed us out into the grasslands in search for food. Because the rainforest was no longer giving us what we needed, we had to go into these other areas and explore them. And funnily enough, at the same time as we were getting pushed out into these grasslands, something else is in there that we encounter. So obviously, we're scavenging for food, we're looking for grubs, roots, we're looking for mushrooms, and also animals. So we're tracking the bison, tracking the cattle, which were in these areas. And funnily enough, by a striking coincidence, psilocybin cubensis, aka magic mushrooms, happens to favor cow manure as a precursor. And so, as our most ancient proto-civilizational ancestors were exploring these grasslands, and they were tracking these animals, and they were finding their deposits, they were going to find chance selections of psilocybin cubensis, of magic mushrooms. And so, of course, you're going to get some people who try the mushrooms. And what are the effects of doing that? Well, if you do it in a small amount, which is likely what they would have done to begin with, right? Take a little tiny piece and see how it affects you. We know that monkeys and other primates already do this, testing a small amount of something to make sure it's safe. So we were probably doing the same. So microdosing psilocybin, that won't make you trip. It won't make you hallucinate. But what it will do is it will sharpen your vision, sharpen your thinking, make you more responsive. In essence, it would give you an incredible evolutionary bonus. And so once they figured that out, with enough sampling of the psilocybin, they would have started to realize that this is actually quite an important thing. And so they started using it over and over and over again. And we now know from modern science that psilocybin can cause neural genesis or neural avalanching, where the neurons in your brain just light up and start communicating in ways that they don't normally communicate, unblocking barricades between different parts of the brain and allowing you to access elements of your own consciousness and your own cognitive abilities that were essentially locked off prior to taking the psilocybin. So as you can imagine, microdosing, well, that would have been an incredible advantage that would have been noticed, and clearly was, because so much evidence of early civilization pays homage to mushrooms in many different forms. The early stages of human development were mushroom cults. They idolized mushrooms, they used mushrooms, they understood them as a sacred tool. And so there's no doubt, amongst other evolutionary drivers, that these mushrooms played a really significant role in increasing our cognitive capabilities, our neural capabilities, our ability to hunt, our ability to survive in general, and so thrive and propagate and advance. And that isn't even the most interesting part. What happens when you go a little bit deeper into the psilocybin experience, which clearly they did based on the shamanistic frameworks that have been laid down through archaic practices that we know about? Well, as anyone who's experienced a psychedelic experience will know, when you get sufficiently deep enough into these experiences, reality itself can change in very dramatic ways. One of the most common onset experiences that strengthens once you're getting deeper into the dosage is the emergence of geometric structures, precise geometry to reality. Things become a lot more clearly mathematical and precision engineered in a certain way. And the fractal nature of reality, the underlying geometric structures that our physicists also interpret through their simulations of fundamental energies and properties in the universe and in space-time, these fundamental geometries, they seem to emerge out of the actual environment around you. They melt into your existence. Now imagine early human hominids with a very, very low degree of self-awareness, acting more as an animal, suddenly having these incredibly powerful experiences, both visually, audially, and in general. I mean, your entire perception, your entire sense of self can change dramatically. What would that do to an emerging consciousness? Having such an intense experience of higher levels of thinking, higher mathematical geometry, perhaps even encountering entities, getting intuitions and senses and feelings that you've never felt before. And then, once you realize that so many of these geometric properties and principles that we've discovered in science are represented within the majority of world religions, monotheistic or otherwise, these ancient symbols and signs and geometries that seem to be echoed through spiritual principles then discovered in modern day physics emerge in these psychedelic states, emerge in these psychoactive states, which would suggest that you're getting some form of a glimpse into the underlying architecture, into the scaffolding of reality itself. So I think it's pretty clear that this was a significant catalyst forest. It helped jumpstart civilization. But this is the real kicker. If we take into consideration the possibility that consciousness itself is a non-local force that we're basically tapping into as a complex bio-electrochemical quantum antenna, if we're essentially like a computer rendering a fundamental force into something that we call consciousness, then perhaps these psychedelic states are glimpses into what we would maybe categorize as higher dimensional states of existence. So you're not moving your physical body, but you're moving your conscious perception, your awareness, a non-material state. You know, people talk about the material realm, the dense realm. Everything here is vibrating so quickly that it's actually fused together in an illusion of solidity. But if there are other states of existence that are beyond material, then if your consciousness itself is non-local and can navigate through dimensional space, then it makes sense that you could actually ascend to and experience immaterial, non-material states of consciousness. And who's to say those aren't real? Just because we consider this dense, illusionary, material energy realm the only thing that's real, and I think that's an incredibly blinded conclusion to come to. I think that the dense material realm is real, but there are many other realms that are very real, and they don't have to be material to be real. And so my point is this: our ancestors may have been accessing higher dimensional realms of consciousness. What did they do with that? Well, perhaps at the beginning it was just passed down through oral tradition, word of mouth. Once writing was discovered, they started putting it down into symbols, the same symbols that we now have in our church windows, in our temples, in our cathedrals. Once they'd written down these sacred geometric symbols, these higher dimensional blueprints that they were basically distilling down from their experiences into 2D space by writing it down and scratching it into stones and into cuneiform, eventually, as this was passed from shamanic tradition to shamanic tradition, and as we started to evolve and grow as a species, using these psychoactive medicines as one of the catalysts to increase our acceleration, we started trying to actually design these higher dimensional objects in three-dimensional space. And this is where you bring in the incredible, mind-boggling structures that litter our world from the ancient past that still to this day defy our understanding of our ancestors' understanding of engineering, of mathematics, of astronomy, of so many different principles in science that we thought were completely out of the question for these people, and yet it's represented in limestone and in rose quartz, in all of these different materials that they were digging from the earth and placing into these precision geometric structures, almost as if they were trying to represent the higher dimensional geometric states that they were experiencing in transcendental consciousness into the 3D realm. And just as Nikola Tesla said, if you want to understand the universe, you have to look at it as frequency and vibration. And our ancient ancestors understood this because there is evidence all across the world that many of these ancient temples and subterranean complexes exhibit psychoacoustic architecture. Psychoacoustic architecture is architecture that's deliberately designed to influence sound waves in novel ways.
One more time. 1, 2, and 3. Right.
To channel it, to lens it, to bend it, manipulate it in certain ways. And the most impressive subterranean complexes that date thousands of years back into the past exhibit precision geometry and incredible examples of acoustic lensing and different psychoacoustic architectural principles. Psychoacoustic, because these actual principles involved, discovered through modern science through experiments with things like infrasound, actually influence our states of consciousness, change our states of awareness, shifting the brainwave into theta state and deeper states of transcendental consciousness through the influence of sound, acoustics, harmonics, tones, frequencies. And our ancient ancestors understood this to a level so incredible that they actually developed huge stone instruments that they sat inside and activated with tonal harmonic keys. Chants, mantras, hymns, the secret codes, the things that were whispered to them in their transcendental states, they kept these things and passed them from shaman to shaman. And eventually, when it came to the engineering, they developed these places to resonate these tones, these resonant frequencies, these sacred harmonics. The sacred geometry in the actual architecture, matched with the sacred harmonic tones, the right frequencies, the right bandwidths, created transcendental acoustic temples. You know, this is what I find so incredible, that modern science is now proving that these harmonics and specific infrasound tones can change your state of consciousness, right? We've been experimenting with that quite a while. Just ask the CIA. Plenty of evidence of them being involved in harmonic influence and trying to understand technologies that can do that. And then of course you've got the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences with their binaural tones and their ability to change you into theta state in the brain. So this is proven concept, and we've now discovered that these ancient structures all over the world are doing the exact same thing on a massive scale. So that's the important thing, is instead of using wires, instead of using cables, generators, batteries. They were using the raw materials of the earth, limestone, rose quartz, granite, things that are energetic. Limestone is a fantastic material for manipulating acoustics. Rose quartz granite is a naturally conductive or piezoelectric material. They were using the natural materials of the earth, configuring them into very precise geometric structures that they were mirroring from their transcendental, psychedelic, astral, shamanic states, bringing these ideas, these higher geometries, down into the physical world by constructing them in the stone of the earth. And then they were activating these sound temples, these acoustic chambers, with the correct tone, the correct frequency, the correct chant, the correct mantra. Something that's probably lost to time for the most part. So you have these incredible places all over the world that have now just become tourist attractions, when in reality they could just be dormant technologies for transcending your consciousness. Dormant because the keys to them, the harmonic unlocking keys, have been stolen, lost, hidden. But I think this is the truth. Frequency and vibration, harmonics, oscillation, everything is in motion. Everything is constantly in motion. It's all energetic, and I think that our ancient ancestors understood this in a way that we're discovering, but we're discovering it through a different lens, through a different type of technological route. They went through a very natural route that ended up becoming incredibly impressive. I mean, look at these megalithic structures. We can't build them. We can't build them today. Look at the Great Pyramid of Egypt. They understood a different type of technology. Technology of consciousness, a science of consciousness, that we're really only just discovering now. Isn't that impressive? I mean, what do you think they really understood? What did they really know? So much of it is lost to time. So much of it's hidden away. I mean, just look at the Vatican with the apocryphal archives, the secret archives. It's kilometers and kilometers worth of shelving for essentially classified history. They've completely shut off huge, vast archives of historical data, of antiquities, of accounts and testimony and artifacts. And it's just incredible that our history has essentially been classified by a religious institution, and nobody really questions that. It's like, maybe they have some really significant pieces of the puzzle that we deserve to know, because humanity doesn't deserve to have its entire history censored from it. But these things that our ancient ancestors were doing and achieving, these are obvious. These were clear. It's demonstrable in the actual architecture that's still sitting there. Look into places like the Hypogeum of Halsefieni in Malta. In the island of Malta. That's an incredible structure, a subterranean acoustic amplification temple. That's what that is. And these are all over the world. Yeah, we might be rediscovering this stuff, but they were doing it in a different way. Our ancestors were doing it in a different way, a holistic, natural way, leveraging the planet's raw materials. We're going down a slightly different route. I still have optimism that that route can still discover the spiritual principles that these people were obviously resonating with. I still have faith that we can do that through a different technological medium. But our one is clearly very destructive. It has a lot of destructive potential. And I don't know if their technologies did. I don't think these sound temples and resonance frequency technologies that I think they were definitely using, reducing the mass of objects, levitating, creating these incredible structures in ways that still just blow our minds. Yeah, I think they had some secrets up their sleeves when it came to harmonics and frequency and sound. Again, we're discovering that sound in high enough and specific frequencies can dampen the mass of an object, make it levitate. And we're just discovering all of these ancient, archaic sciences that they were leveraging at much more sophisticated levels than we could ever truly have imagined previously. What do you think our ancient ancestors were doing? Let me know below. Tell me your thoughts about it. I think it's one of the most fascinating threads in the whole human puzzle, and I think it ties into a lot of stuff. I think it ties into a lot of the paranormal, maybe even the UFO subject. Great cycles on the earth, destruction cycles. I mean, the CIA classified the Adam and Eve story. If you've never heard of the Adam and Eve story, look it up. Go on the CIA's Freedom of Information Act library and check out that story. All about great cycles and cataclysmic destructions that were happening over time. That may have wiped out previous civilizations on the planet. The CIA classified that book. Check it out. So my point is that I think that our history is littered with the transcendental. Our history is littered with paranormal and the psychoactive and the astral and the shamanic. It's only recently that we've decided, oh, that's not very good anymore. Since the, you know, Age of Enlightenment, Newtonian reductionism, reducing everything down to just basic materials. That's not the reality of things. And we're discovering, again, through things like quantum theory and simulation theory, through our technologies that we're developing, we're realizing that that's basically a fad. We're going through that materialistic reductionist fad, and we're on the back end of it now. Coming into the quantum era, the information era, you know, the immaterial era, whatever you want to call it. The Age of Aquarius, it's coming. It's coming, and we're all here to witness it. I'm happy to be here with you.